pharmaceuticals in the water can't be good for fish. What can I do to help?
Well, the good news is that towns across the state are offering new locations for residents to safely and anonymously dispose of their unused and expired drugs. If your town does not have a disposal program, you can always crush tablets or empty capsules into the garbage.
How do I find out more?
Visit citizenscampaign.org to find a safe disposal location near you and follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
I get it. Don't flush your drugs.
You're listening to WPKN 89.5 FM, Bridgeport, serving communities in Fairfield, New Haven, Litchfield, and Suffolk counties, and streaming to the world at WPKN.org.
Morning. You're tuning into Seeking Wellness Radio, Our Bodies Explained. I'm your host, Dr. Verdi, and today we're here with Mark. Thank you for driving through the freezing rain to come help me engineer this show. We're broadcasting live from the WPKN studios. And have you noticed that as our days get shorter and our nights longer, that it can be harder to get out of bed in the morning? That's something that I think is universal for all of us. You know, when it's cold outside of our bed and we just want to hit snooze and catch a little more sleep. So some of you may even think, man, I got to try harder to get to bed earlier this evening. And that might be, it might be like Groundhog Day. It might be something you say every morning because you're just so cozy in your bed, not ready to wake up when the sun's not out. So I decided to make today's show all about the world of sleep. Did you know that sleep can be one of the single greatest acts of self-care and that sacrificing sleep can have huge ramifications for our health? So I am taking questions today since this is a live show. So please call in with any questions that you may have about your bodies, health, sleep, any of that. The number to call is 203-336-9756. So in the preventative medicine realm, there seems to be two major players that get a lot of attention, diet and exercise. Anytime somebody's trying to be healthier, they talk about the new diet they're on or the new exercise routine that they're on. But we don't often talk about the medicinal value of adequate sleep as much as I feel that we should. In fact, I think we often undermine the importance of sleep. Many of us will sacrifice the nighttime hours that we should be using to get ready for bed, to finish up projects, catch up with our partners or our friends. Or if you're an introvert, you just need time to be alone by yourself, you know, catching up on what happened that day. But as you'll discover over the next hour, obtaining good quality sleep is crucial for our health. I most often see in my clinical practice sleep issues being a secondary concern that comes up when I'm talking with my patients. So very rarely do I see a patient coming in with the main concern of insomnia or poor sleep quality. Generally, they're coming in with another issue. And as many of you listeners are aware, I take what's called a naturopathic approach in treating general health concerns, meaning that during the first appointment and every appointment after, I try to identify and treat all of the underlying causes or contributors to somebody's health problems. So, you know, one of the big questions that I ask at every appointment is how well people are sleeping, especially during that first visit. And, you know, it won't just be, so how many hours of sleep are you getting? Or, you know, are you feeling well rested when you wake up in the morning? I actually want to know a lot of the details. So I want to know, once you get to bed, what time is that? When do you start winding down? When do you get to bed? And then how long does it take for you to actually fall asleep once you get into bed? If it takes a while, Why is that? What's going on? What are you doing? Or what's your mind doing? What's your how does your body feel? And then when do you wake up next? Are you waking up every couple of hours throughout the night, or are you waking up in the morning? And then when you wake up, are you feeling well rested, or are you still feeling tired? All of these are so important for me to know. So, you know, sometimes I think that patients might think that I'm really nosy because I want to know all of the details. But as you'll hear soon, it can really help with understanding, you know, areas that somebody could improve with their health. So poor sleep is very frequently a contributor to health concerns that people are struggling with, ranging from mood disorders like anxiety and depression. Irritability is a big one, to fatigue and metabolic syndromes like high blood pressure and obesity and diabetes. So there's actually a big public health effort right now to increase awareness among both doctors and people on the importance of sleep and identifying and treating sleep disorders. The average person needs anywhere from 7.5 to 8.5 hours of sleep a night. Babies, children, and teens often require more sleep. And it's ironic because teens, I think, are one of the most stressed out group of people in the U.S. today. From having final exams and midterms to big projects to extracurriculars, and eventual college applications, a lot of teens are coming home and having to start homework. Or if they're doing extracurriculars, they have to do homework after dinner. And that can lead to a lot of teens sacrificing sleep in order to get these things done for the eventual college application process. So, fun fact, we sleep for about 1/3 of our entire lifespan. Meaning that if we were to live to 90, 30 years of our life would be spent asleep. If we spend that much time asleep, it's clearly important for our health, right? But on many occasions, I've been parts of discussions about how little sleep people can function on. And it seems that for a long time, people had the belief that time equals money and sleep isn't important, especially if you can sacrifice those nighttime or early morning hours to get to work and be productive. But the Centers for Disease Control considers sleep deprivation as a whole as a public health epidemic. Here's a quote directly from their website that's going to summarize a lot of what we talk about today. Sleep is increasingly recognized as important to public health, with sleep insufficiency linked to motor vehicle crashes, industrial disasters, and medical and other occupational errors. So people are getting into accidents, disasters are happening, and medical errors, people's health is suffering because of sleep deprivation. Unintentionally falling asleep, nodding off while driving, and having difficulty performing daily tasks because of sleepiness all may contribute to these hazardous outcomes. Persons experiencing sleep insufficiency are also more likely to suffer from chronic diseases such as hypertension, high blood pressure, and diabetes. So that's from the CDC website. You know, one of the big things I want to do for today's radio show is increase awareness of how important sleep is. And I'm hoping that when you see your friends and family over the next couple of days, talk to them about it. Tell them what you've learned. If you're struggling with sleep, go to your doctor and get checked up and make sure that it's not impacting other areas of your health. So let's get a little more into the science behind sleep. Our brain initiates the process of sleep by releasing the hormone melatonin from our brain in response to low lighting. So prior to artificial lighting, we would often sleep within 2 to 3 hours of sunset. This is an estimate. It was done by studying pre-industrial societies. Sleep puts our bodies in what's called an anabolic state, which is when we're building and regenerating our body. It's a very nourishing state for our body to be in. Our immune system is more active, combating illness. our muscles are rebuilding, our skeleton is also rebuilding, and our nervous system is in a state of calm, and our body is really focused on repairing our tissues. So I've always pictured this as, if you've seen Fantasia and you remember when Mickey Mouse gets the brooms to start cleaning the castle, that's what I picture sleep being, except not going into overdrive like it was in Fantasia. But our body just kind of cleans up and reduces inflammation. There are two main phases of sleep. There's non-REM, or rapid eye movement, and there's REM sleep. So non-REM is stage 1 and 2 of sleep, and that's when you're in between being awake and being asleep. And stage 3 and 4 is when rapid eye movement occurs. And that state of sleep was coined REM sleep because scientists found that that was when animals of all kinds started to have an increase in eye movements. This is when cell regeneration happens. Every phase of sleep is characterized with its own unique changes in brain waves and eye movements and muscle activity. And cycling between non-REM and REM sleep in an adult takes about 90 minutes. So throughout the night, we're cycling between these stages of sleep. And the total time spent in REM sleep, or that regenerating sleep, is only about 20 to 25% of our sleep. But we require the other stages of sleep to get into REM sleep. So we often think about sleep as a time when our bodies rest and shut down, but actually our body is dedicating a lot of energy to healing itself, removing wastes, repairing tissues. If you're just tuning in, this is Dr. Verdi. You're listening to Seeking Wellness Radio, and we're talking all about the wonderful healing benefits of sleep and the effects of sleep deprivation. If you have any questions, this is a live show. You can call 203-336-9756. So in our brain, when we fall asleep, our brain's overall metabolic activity reduces. ATP, which is the basic molecule for energy, is restored in different areas of our brain. And throughout the day, our brain has a buildup of metabolic waste from using ATP. And there is a unit of sugar storage called glycogen, and our glycogen levels deplete as we remain awake in our brains. So sleep can help generate ATP. It can help increase glycogen storage in our brain. And also, the process of being alive when we're generating energy, we also create free radicals or reactive oxygen species. These free radicals can be, they're part of the inflammatory process in our body, and they can be detrimental to our health if we're unable to quench them. Things like antioxidants, a healthy diet, and sleep can help quench those free radicals and prevent them from causing damage in our bodies. So while we're sleeping, our metabolism slows down, we produce less reactive oxygen species, and sleep is thought to increase antioxidant levels in our brain to counteract any damage from the reactive oxygen species. So sleep is nourishing, it helps to reduce inflammation in our bodies, and it's been found to enhance learning and memory. So, you know, there's one study where infants were taught an artificial language, the rules for an artificial language. And one group of infants were able to go to sleep for 2 to 4 hours after. The other group was kept awake, and they found that the infants who slept for 2 to 4 hours after were able to remember more of the artificial language. This is so relevant for high schoolers and college students and grad students who are up late, often studying. If you're listening in and you're a student or a parent of a student, the trick is to work with our bodies, not against our bodies. So take a nap after a few hours of studying, even if it's as short as a 10-minute nap, or it just involves you lying down and quieting your mind. You will remember more from what you studied, and It's because in the early phases of sleep, our brain is processing and putting information into storage in our memory. And that's called consolidation. And I actually did this while studying throughout medical school. I would take brief naps, and even a 20-minute nap would help me remember more. And medical school is like drinking through a fire hose. There's a lot of information you have to take in. So I highly recommend cat naps to any people who have to learn significant amounts of information in a short amount of time. So sleep deficiencies have also been found to impact learning, so much so that in a study done in 2009 in children who were 7 to 8 years old who got less than 8 hours of sleep, they were found to be more hyperactive, inattentive, and impulsive. Guess what learning disorder is characterized with hyperactivity, inattention, and impulsivity? Attention deficit disorder. So it's interesting that there is overlap between symptoms of sleep deprivation and attention deficit disorder in kids. So when we deprive our brains of sleep, we're taking away the brain's ability to replenish its major fuel source, clear toxins. There's a buildup of a molecule called adenosine in our frontal lobe, and it inhibits the body processes that are associated with being awake. So as adenosine builds up, we start to feel more tired throughout the day. Coffee and caffeine can block the effects of adenosine, which is why it helps people stay awake longer before they need to go to sleep again. But we're found to make more mistakes when we've been awake longer. And it also, sleep deprivation causes mood changes, daytime sleepiness, an irritable mood, poor memory, concentration. We even have slower reaction rates and incoordination, which can lead to hazardous driving. So a lot of people believe that you can do things like put your music louder in the car. You can make the car really cold. You can open the windows. There are things you can do to counteract falling asleep at the wheel. But it's found that those individuals who are exhausted and driving still fall asleep for microseconds at a time, and they're completely unaware of it. So they're driving and they're thinking they're fine, but they're actually falling asleep and maybe veering in and out of lanes and putting other people at risk. It's extremely dangerous to drive while tired. This is a message from my husband, the ER doc. If you've ever judged a drunk driver, think about the last time that you drove tired, putting yourself and others at a similar risk. In one study based out of Sweden, where 50,000 people were followed, it was found that sleep deprivation made people twice as likely to die in a car accident. The Challenger, the Space Shuttle Challenger explosion, the Exxon Valdrex oil spill are among some of the big disasters that have been attributed to people making mistakes while sleep deprived. It is so easy to call Uber these days, so there really is no excuse for driving while sleep deprived. So, hormone changes. There is a lot that goes on hormonally in our sleep. One of my favorite hormones of all time, growth hormone. It's a hormone that is released during the first few hours of sleep, and it leads to our tissues repairing, and it's considered an anti-aging hormone. Growth hormone helps to direct repair of our muscles, causing increased strength and muscle definition, and repairs joints and tendons, and wound healing even occurs as a result of growth hormone. So if you're going to work out, you need to make sure that you're sleeping enough so that your body can heal your muscles and tissues. I always tell my patients that if they've had a bad night of sleep, that they should focus on getting to bed the next night instead of hitting the gym, because it can actually be detrimental to your workout regimen to force yourself to work out when you're already sleep deprived. The exercise can become more inflammatory for your body than anti-inflammatory. We have a call-in. Hi, this is Dr. Verdi. Thank you for listening.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. What's your question?
So my question is, sorry, you might hear my little one singing in the background. My husband currently works second shift, and he's worked it for a very long time. And we do have a little one, so he definitely is sleep deprived. His biggest obstacle that we're trying to figure out is when he does come home from work at midnight, he has a very, very hard time going to sleep and usually can't fall asleep until sometime after 2 o'clock. But what I wanted to know is there a way for him to train his body to try to go to sleep earlier, even if it was, say, 1 a.m., so he can get at least close to 7 hours of sleep? Because I know at least 7 to 8 hours of sleep is definitely healthier for you, just because my concern is he's not getting enough sleep, you know, and he's up in the morning with our son and just all the health benefits of getting sleep.
Yeah.
Can he train his body to sleep longer?
Yes, this is a great question, and I will answer it once we... Or should we stay, Mark? Should we stay? Okay. So I'm in the same boat as you. I have a 10-month-old, and my husband works a night shift in the emergency department, and he'll often come home at 12 or at 8 a.m. His schedule is often changing. So I'm sure you've seen the effects of the sleep deprivation in your husband. He might be more forgetful or fall asleep randomly, just be more tired throughout the day. One of the things that I recommend for night shift workers is first to get really, really thick, heavy curtains that block any sunlight so that when your husband is sleeping, he's able to sleep for longer without the sun waking him up. The other thing is, for night shift workers, they can get light blocking glasses that they can wear while they're at work. And it's specifically blue light that blocks our ability to make melatonin. So he could get these glasses and start wearing them, you know, closer to 8 or 9 when he's at work, wear them on the way home. And that will help his brain increase melatonin in spite of him having to look at screens or his phone or the artificial lighting blocking his own natural production of melatonin. The other thing he can do is what's called progressive muscle relaxation, which you can find videos on YouTube. But basically, it's a way of inducing relaxation in your body by basically starting at your toes and going through every major muscle group in your body, slowly increasing tension in that muscle group for 5 seconds and then releasing it. And as you go through each muscle group, it helps to induce relaxation and get people to sleep quicker. So that's something he could try doing. He could also listen to relaxation audios when he's in bed to try to get to sleep earlier. And then the last thing he could do is take melatonin, because the problem with second shift is that they're not able to generate enough melatonin to fall asleep as quickly as they would want. So, you know, a dose between 1 to 3 milligrams would be fine for him to take help speed up the falling asleep process. And
is that better to take prior to bedtime or during the day?
Oh, yeah, melatonin. So that would be good for him to take probably as soon as he gets home and he's starting to wind down. So if he eats dinner before he goes to bed, he could take it right after dinner, maybe an hour before he hits the hay.
Okay.
And then towards the end of the show, I'm going to go through herbs that can help with reducing the time between getting in bed and falling asleep. So we'll also be talking about that.
Okay. And then like behaviors like being on a cell phone, playing video games, I try to explain to him that those are actually things that could probably keep you up.
Yeah. So
prevent you from falling.
It can keep people awake. The problem is when people are working second shift, I find that they feel like they don't really have any time for themselves because they're coming home and then they immediately have to go to sleep. And then I'm sure your husband has to immediately be in dad mode when he wakes up. And
exactly.
And so you know, playing video games might be important to his mental health. And so getting those blue light blocking sunglasses would help because he'd be able to be on his phone playing video games and decompressing and having some me time without blocking his brain's ability to make melatonin. So those sleep blocking glasses are key. Or sorry, blue light blocking glasses are key.
Okay. Yeah, I'll definitely look into those. Well, thank you. I'm really happy I came across the station this morning.
Yeah, have a good holiday, and thanks for tuning in.
Thank you. Take care.
Okay, so those were some great questions, and we're going to go into some of the effects that we see for sleep deprivation on night shift workers. But we were talking about how important sleep is for exercise and seeing results after we've exercised. There's one study at the University of Chicago that found that dieters who were well-rested lost more fat. About 56% of their weight loss was due to fat compared to muscle mass, which is lost when people are sleep-deprived. So sleep can actually dictate whether you're losing muscle or fat. And losing weight as fat means that the body looks more toned, the muscles are stronger. And I really think that it's related to growth hormone and the effects of growth hormone on building muscle, but also cortisol. When we're not sleeping enough, our cortisol levels tend to be higher, and cortisol causes our body to break down protein. So that's where our muscle is going when we're sleep deprived. Now, this is really, the next thing I'm going to talk about is so important. If you're tuning in, this is Dr. Verdi. You're listening to Seeking Wellness Radio, Our Bodies Explained, and we're talking all about the health benefits of sleep. If you have any questions, the number to call in is 203-336-9756. So not sleeping enough is associated with our brains producing lower levels of leptin and a higher amount of ghrelin. So these are hormones in our body that regulate our appetite. So ghrelin is a hormone that's secreted from our stomach, and it stimulates our appetite. So my nickname for ghrelin is gremlin, because it causes us to feel like we just need to eat and eat and eat, and we can't eat enough. We never feel satisfied. Our appetite is always increased. While leptin is made by our fat cells, and it suppresses our appetite. So when we don't sleep enough, we have lower levels of leptin, which help us feel satisfied, and we have higher levels of ghrelin, which cause us to feel hungry. And specifically, reductions in leptin cause us to crave carbohydrates and junk food. So, you know, a lot of people, as I talked about earlier, prioritize exercise and diet. But if you're not sleeping enough, then your diet may sabotage it, because you're going to have that increase in appetite and cravings for junk food. So it may be important to prioritize sleep for a few months and get enough sleep before going on a diet. Because then you may not have the cravings that sabotage our diets. The next time you find yourself craving carbs and sugars, assess how much you slept the night before and see if you just need to take a nap to replenish your brain. And there's actually a dose-dependent relationship between how much sleep we get and what our body mass index is, and whether or not we are more likely to be obese. The last hormone is melatonin, which is infamous for being the sleep hormone. It's the one that I just discussed with our caller. Melatonin rises, and it's actually a super powerful antioxidant that's made all over our bodies, especially in our brains and our gastrointestinal tract. Melatonin boosts our immune system, especially in detecting and killing cancerous and precancerous cells. It helps boost our immune activity, increases our white blood cell count, which are the soldiers of our immune system. and improves our response against bacteria and viruses. This is why we find that sleep-deprived people, like new parents, for example, are prone to getting sick more often. And we see a strong causal linkage between sleep deprivation and cancers of the breast and colon. And this has mainly been seen in night shift workers. And it's likely the impact of the imbalanced circadian rhythm on our immune system. So sleeping can boost our immune system. It can also boost our metabolism. It can also be the reason why we're craving junk food and can't seem to eat healthy for long periods of time. Our blood sugar regulation is also impacted with sleep deficiency. So when we're sleeping at night, our bodies are producing chemicals that go into our DNA and cause the expression of genes that regulate our blood sugar levels. And when we're not sleeping, this isn't happening. So the less sleep one gets, the more likely they are to develop diabetes. In fact, there was one study done where they were looking at 11 healthy men who were only able to sleep 4 hours a night for 6 nights. And they showed impaired glucose tolerance. They had a 40% reduction in clearing sugar from their bloodstream. So they became pre-diabetic from not sleeping enough for 6 nights. If you're chronically not sleeping enough, imagine the effects that's happening on your body. Adults who sleep 6 hours or less are 1.7 times more likely to get diabetes. 5 hours or less are 2.5 times more likely to get diabetes. So diabetes, it's not all about, what foods you're eating or whether you're exercising. It's also about how much sleep you're getting. And for a big, big part, it's about genetic predisposition, but our sleep can really, determine what genes are being activated or inactivated. And then we already talked about the mood changes, but one thing that I want to note is that when people are sleep deprived, they actually struggle more with symptoms of anxiety and tend to turn more frequently towards alcohol to calm down. It's interesting to note that alcohol impairs our ability to get a full night's rest. It actually blocks our body from being able to go into a REM state. So this could be a catch-22. We're sleep deprived, we're anxious, we crave alcohol, we drink the alcohol, and then we don't get good quality sleep, and we're sleep deprived, and we crave alcohol, and then we don't get good quality sleep, and it just goes on and on. So focusing on getting a good night's sleep, maybe cutting out alcohol for, 5 days out of the week and enjoying it 1 day out of the week may be beneficial for your health. And the last thing is sleep apnea, which is a sleep disorder where there are pauses in breathing. And it's often because the airway muscles collapse and block our body's ability to intake oxygen. People will often come out of a state of deep sleep in order to resume breathing. So they'll snore and then pause, and then they may seem to wake up. The most common symptom of it is snoring and interruptions in breathing and waking up breathless. It's diagnosed through a sleep study. And symptoms of sleep apnea often include feeling tired during the day, being obese, diabetic, struggling with metabolic issues, and snoring, as we talked about before. If you notice any of these symptoms, or if you're concerned about it, if you're feeling really tired during the day, bring it up with your doctor. See if you should get a sleep study. The treatment for sleep apnea, if you're overweight, losing weight can really help, but there's plenty of people who have a normal BMI who have sleep apnea. And in those cases, in all cases of sleep apnea, using a CPAP machine, which increases airflow through your airways, can really help change your biochemistry. I've seen weight just fall off of people who are able to get enough oxygen when they're sleeping at night. And the experience of not getting enough oxygen and waking up throughout the night, that's actually extremely stressful for our bodies. And it's been found that those times when the brain has to pull itself out of deep sleep to resume breathing, I mean, that's life-threatening, it causes our sympathetic nervous system in our brain to become more active. And we find that people who struggle with sleep apnea are more prone to having high blood pressure as a result of the increase in the sympathetic or stressed out part of our nervous system. So some studies have even found that sleep difficulties are associated with chronic pain like migraines, and people who are sleep deprived are more sensitive to pain. So as we've talked about over the last half of the show, sleep deprivation changes our biochemistry, it changes our bodies, it puts us at risk for disease, whereas getting enough sleep is anti-inflammatory, it's rebuilding to our bodies, it stimulates our metabolism, it's nourishing for our immune system. It has global impacts on our bodies. So this begs the question of whether naps are good for you. So a lot of people around the world take midday naps, and we naturally have a midday drop in energy at around 2 p.m., which is a result of our internal circadian clock. And napping has been associated with, first, a reduced risk of death from heart attacks. Naps during the day and mild evening exercise is associated with improved sleep and mental health in people as they get older. And there was a study in Greece of 240,000 adults, and it was found that people who napped had a few times a day had a lower risk of death due to heart disease. So people who nap at work show lower levels of overall stress, improved mood and thinking. So go figure that Google, among other big employers, have created nap rooms for their employees to take a midday nap. So if you're still listening, you're probably wondering, how do I know if I'm getting enough sleep? Well, we could go off of symptoms. So are you feeling well rested when you wake up in the morning? What's your mood like? Are you tired during the day? Are you irritable? How's your thinking? Are you forgetful? Do you make mistakes with reading and writing? Are you snoring? Is your spouse constantly waking you up and telling you, stop snoring, you're waking me up? Is your spouse constantly waking you up from snoring? Or do you feel like your metabolism might be slowing down? Are you feeling like you're exercising and eating well, but you're not noticing any change in your weight? These may all be indicators that you're not sleeping enough. The other thing you can do is you can track your sleep on a sleep app on your phone. If you leave your phone on the pillow, it will track any sounds or movements that you make, and it's able to, from that information, track how much sleep you're getting and what your sleep quality is like. So if you're just tuning in, I'm Dr. Verdi, and you're listening to Seeking Wellness Radio, Our Bodies Explained. We're talking about the medicinal benefits of sleep. If you have any questions, call in 203-336-9756. So sleep efficiency is the term used to describe how quickly someone falls asleep and how long they're able to remain asleep. It declines as we age. This is something you may notice in your parents. They just don't sleep as much. They're awake at 4 a.m. and ready to start their days. And currently, we're not sure why older people have difficulty with sleep efficiency. One thought is imbalanced cortisol, stress hormone, waking hormone, and melatonin, our sleep hormone levels, may be causing an imbalance in our circadian rhythm. It is found that as people age, they produce lower levels of melatonin, and cortisol levels peak earlier in the morning, causing them to wake up earlier. But it's also possible that older people may be more sensitive to light exposure. And there could be other contributors, like needing to wake up throughout the night to urinate, that causes somebody to eventually just be awake all night. Currently, there are no formal guidelines for treating sleep deprivation in primary or specialty care. The most effective treatment is to sleep longer or take a short nap during the day for less than 2 hours. Catching up on sleep on the weekends does not improve the effects of sleep deprivation. So you really have to focus on sleeping more when you're able to get sleep. Do we have a question? Oh. Hi there. Hello. This is Dr. Verdi. Thanks for tuning in.
Hi. Thank you for your program. It's been very useful to me. Thank you. I just wanted to make a comment because you've given me several suggestions. I'm an elderly person. I'm 78. I never had any sleep problems in my life. And I, all of a sudden, about a year or so ago, started to have sleep problems. And in fact, sometimes I was up all night. I mean, I'd look at TV or try to do something, but I didn't know what was happening to me. And I think it may have been related to a medication that I was taking called Prolia, which is for osteoporosis. And I was wondering if medication sometimes in elderly people can influence their sleep patterns, because this had never happened to me. I always fell into bed. I was so happy to get there, you know, my whole life. And then all of a sudden, I'm tossing around all night, which is, I mean, very strange. Okay, thank you for your program.
You're welcome. So it looks like some people, I just did a quick search online, it looks like some people on Prolia do experience insomnia. And I often recommend that when people are struggling with a new symptom, looking at changes that have happened within that period of time of struggling with their symptom. And so in your case, you might be right in Prolia contributing to your insomnia. Did you find that when you discontinued the medication, your sleep got better?
Oh, sorry. Oh, am I still on? Yeah, yes. But it took quite a while. And now, once in a while, I can't sleep. But after getting off this medicine, which, of course, I'm not sure is the right thing, because my doctor said, well, you want osteoporosis. Well, of course I don't, but I can't live without sleep. So I stopped it. It's taken over 6 months, and my doctor said, well, that's out of your system a long time ago. Well, I don't think that she's necessarily right.
Well, I think she's right in the sense that medications have a half-life, and so they do clear out of our system. But, oh, should I recommend turning away from the radio? Oh, could you turn your radio off?
No, but I turned my telephone off by mistake.
Okay, so...
I can hear you.
Okay, great. So yeah, it's likely that your body is having a difficult time. You know, we were just talking about how when people get older, they have lower levels of melatonin, higher levels of cortisol. It's possible that being on that medication shifted your circadian rhythm, and it's taking time for your body to get back into the rhythm of things in terms of when to fall asleep and when to wake up, which is very common as people age. And in a few minutes, I'm going to be talking about strategies that you can implement to help with that. So be sure to continue listening.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. So yes, certainly medications can cause people to have difficulty falling asleep. I've actually had a few patients who noted that they had difficulty sleeping, and when they discontinued their birth control, they were able to sleep better. And we weren't sure why that was, you know, why physiologically we would see that happen. One thought from a naturopathic perspective is that it could be, you know, putting more stress on our liver to metabolize the hormone. And then, you know, when women wake up between 3 and 5 in Chinese medicine, that correlates with our liver time. This is going more into esoteric medicine. But we found that when they discontinued their hormonal contraception, they were sleeping better. Of course, there are other ways to treat it outside of discontinuing the medication that you're on, especially if you need to be on it. So, as I was saying, there are no formal guidelines. So when I hear that somebody is struggling with getting enough sleep, I'll ask if it's an issue with falling asleep, staying asleep, or both. It is thought that, it's possible that it could be thoughts that you're thinking. If it is, you know, repetitive thoughts. What kind of thoughts are you thinking? A lot of caregivers have thoughts about all of the things that they need to get done the next day. And I recommend for them to keep a notepad next to their bed and just write things down and then let it go so that you can have your peace of mind and get to sleep sooner. For some individuals, stress can keep them from sleeping enough. So physiologically, we'll see that adults with insomnia have higher levels of the stress hormone cortisol and ACTH, which is a hormone that causes the release of cortisol. And these are hormones that are released after we've been exposed to stress. So, you know, perhaps it's individuals who have difficulty winding down from stress in their lives. They may actually be carrying that stress to bed with them. So I often recommend, you know, if you're having trouble sleeping or winding down, sit down with yourself and think about your day and think about the things that happened in your day and how that could have been building and building and building up to eventually creating your mind to have to process all of this stuff and not being able to fall asleep. So stress can show up in the form of overactive thoughts, and we all may have experienced this at some point when we had a difficult breakup or the loss of a loved one or other difficult experience in our lives. Imaging studies have found that those stressed out people who suffer from insomnia have more activity in their limbic and paralimbic structures of their brain when they're trying to fall asleep, which includes the amygdala, which is one of the big areas that our brain processes negative emotions. So when I suspect that this could be the cause, I often discuss the benefits of mindfulness-based meditation or other relaxation strategies. And I recommend that people do it throughout the day, and especially right before bed. It's a way of unpacking the mind or decluttering the mind before bed to reduce the effects of stress. But if you can do it all day, then think about it. You're going home from work or wherever, whatever, from school, and you're not feeling overwhelmed and stressed from the day because you were able to handle all of that stress in a healthy, balanced way. So you can actually train your brain to respond better to stress. Our brains can be rewired using meditation, and you can, specifically mindfulness meditation has been found to rewire how our brain responds to stress, and you can train your brain to be less pessimistic and reactive to stress, increasing relaxation in the body and helping to treat your insomnia. One of the most common interventions is setting up a nighttime routine. So dimming the lights, taking a relaxing bath, drinking chamomile tea, reading a book until you fall asleep. I find discussing a routine can be helpful for people to identify whether they have emotional reasons behind their difficulty sleeping, whether it's regrets, fears, inadequacies, or other things that come out. So if you have difficulty winding down, ask yourself why. Did you feel like you didn't do enough that day or like you didn't have any time for yourself? If that's the case, what would you have liked to do? Make it a point to do it tomorrow. Replaying events of the day could indicate that we need to wind down more frequently throughout the day, potentially using meditation. And adding gratitude as part of our nighttime routine can increase our feelings of happiness and life satisfaction. So those could all go into your nighttime routine. But we can also modify our environment to support good sleep. So dimming lights, getting curtains to block street lights if they're shining in through your window, increasing ambient lighting, for example, getting blue light filters on technology if you need to use technology, or as we were talking, second shift or night shift workers, getting blue light blocking glasses, or even keeping technology off. Putting your work away, keeping a notepad next to your bed, as we talked about earlier, to write things down if they come up. And even putting the room temperature a little cooler can help boost our body's melatonin production and increase sleep. So sleep may also be indicating an imbalance in our diets, too much caffeine, maybe not enough water. There's also snacks that you can have before bed to increase melatonin. So we often think about warm milk as a way to increase melatonin, but cherries have a lot of melatonin too. And that could be a perfect nighttime snack. For the last few nights, I've been eating cherries before bed, and I've been sleeping until 5 a.m. when my son wakes up without any waking, which is rare in a new parent. So cherries could be very beneficial for increasing sleep. Kiwis, two kiwis an hour before bedtime have been found to increase sleep throughout the night, and it may be linked to serotonin in the kiwis, which is a precursor to melatonin. And then I usually recommend that people have a small amount of protein and carbs. So, you know, a cracker with cheese or nut butter. And it's because the carbs, we need carbohydrates to boost insulin in our body. And we need insulin to move tryptophan, an amino acid from our bloodstream, into our cells. And tryptophan is the precursor to serotonin and melatonin. So tryptophan can actually boost sleep as well. Exercise, so not moving enough, can actually predispose us to insomnia. And exercise has been found to be just as effective as taking sleep-inducing medications. It has antidepressant and anti-anxiety effects, and it increases tryptophan, that precursor to melatonin, in our bloodstream, and it increases serotonin synthesis in our brain. So I'm just going to repeat that. Exercise has been as effective in treating insomnia as medications, pharmaceutical drugs. Exercise has been found to be as effective. So implementing some form of exercise could help with your sleep. And then, as we talked about before, alcohol can block our ability to get REM sleep, which is the rejuvenating part of our sleep. And consuming as little as 2 servings within 90 minutes of your bedtime will prevent your system from functioning optimally the next day because of the effects of decreased REM sleep. The medication that's most commonly used to treat insomnia is benzodiazepines. And they're known to increase sleep by an hour, the same effect that exercise has. But the problem is that first, they're not meant for long-term use. The long-term use is associated with increased risk of motor vehicle accidents, falls, and fractures. They decrease REM sleep, which is the part of sleep that nourishes our brains, and they can cause grogginess. So, natural treatments for sleep. I'm actually going to talk about one of my favorites, which is a neutral bath. So, neutral bath is old school naturopathic medicine. Some of the most well-known naturopathic doctors like Benedict Lust and Dr. Kellogg would recommend neutral sitz baths for people struggling with insomnia. And it's a form of hydrotherapy, which is the use of water for medicinal effects. Sitting in body temperature water for 20 to 30 minutes at bedtime can help manipulate the blood flow in the body and cause our parasympathetic nervous system to activate, which is our de-stressing part of our nervous system. And this is perfect for helping people wind down. There's also magnesium deficiencies, which can cause insomnia and restless sleep. Magnesium is thought to be a GABA agonist, and so it helps to increase overall sleep efficiency and reduce the amount of time between lying down and sleeping. And then there's some herbs. We only have 2 minutes left, so I'm going to try to go through them quickly. But there's passion flower, which is a relaxing herb. Energetically, it's recommended for exhausted and depleted people with a lot of insomnia and restless sleep. It's so gentle, it's often okay to use in the elderly and children. Be sure to talk to a healthcare provider before using it. But a double-blind placebo-controlled study found that there was better sleep compared to controls who were just drinking low-dose passion flower in tea form. Hops and valerian are two other herbs that have been found to reduce sleep latency, or the amount of time between getting in bed and falling asleep. And they've been found to increase the amount of sleep, reduce wakings at nighttime as well. So valerian is a weak benzodiazepine receptor agonist, but it's a lot weaker in action than the benzodiazepines. So it's a good alternative to taking benzos for sleep deprivation. So that's our show today. I hope that you found it informative. This is Dr. Verdi at Seeking Wellness Radio on WPKN 89.5. Be sure to tune in on the fourth Saturday of every month from 9 to 10 a.m. to get more health insights and tidbits. Thank you for listening.
Hi, this is Steve DiCostanzo. I'm general manager of community radio station WPKN. As we near the end of 2017, we'd like to thank you, our listeners and financial supporters, for helping us to achieve a real milestone year. Not only were we named by Connecticut Magazine as the best radio station for music in the state, but we also established a WPKN Inc. endowment fund and just flipped the switch on our brand new transmitter. Many of you are now making charitable donations to favorite nonprofits, and we'd like you to keep nonprofit WPKN in mind. Now more than ever, independent media outlets like WPKN are protecting your freedoms of speech and expression. Please reply to our year-end appeal letter or go online 24 hours a day via our website to make your donation at WPKN.org. You might even wish to dig a bit deeper this year because of the new tax bill. From all of us at WPKN, have a wonderful holiday season and our very best in the coming year.
Hi, this is Mark the Mechanic from the Car Bob Show. While we always try to steer you in the right direction towards repairing your car, there is that time when you just need to say goodbye to your old friend. This is what's so special about WPKN. If we can't tell you how to fix your car, we can help you get rid of it. Donate your car to WPKN and receive a generous tax deduction. And you are helping WPKN with the funds needed to keep this great radio station going 24/7 with the best programming heard anywhere. It's very simple. Go to WPKN.org, click on the car key. All the instructions are there to help make the whole process as easy as possible. Once again, I want to thank you for your continuing support and being a part of your community radio station, WPKN 89.5 FM and WPKN.org.
Are you an adult with an ongoing health condition such as arthritis, high blood pressure, heart disease, diabetes, or depression? Consider a Live Well workshop. The Live Well workshops provide techniques to deal with stress, pain, and fatigue, nutrition and exercise options, effective ways to talk to others about your health, a step-by-step plan to improve your health and your life. There is no cost to attend. Live Well workshops meet once a week for 6 weeks. Caregivers are welcome. For more information on the Live Well programs or to find a workshop near you, please visit www.cthealthyliving.org or call 203-814-3693. Live Well is sponsored by the Southwestern Connecticut Agency on Aging, the State Department on Aging, and the State Department of Public Health.
No matter where you are in the United States, cancer care is here for you. Cancer Care is the leading national nonprofit organization providing free professional support services and information to help patients, families, and caregivers manage the emotional, practical, and financial challenges of cancer. From help with co-payments to in-person telephone and online support groups, informative workshops, and publications, Cancer Care is there to provide help and hope. Our vision is to be the first place to turn for support by all those affected by cancer. To learn more, visit cancercare.org or call 800-813-HOPE. That's 1-800-813-4673.
Hello, I'm Kristen Casado with the Alzheimer's Association Connecticut chapter. We provide help to 70,000 people in our state with Alzheimer's and other dementias and to 175,000 caregivers here in our state. Our website is www.alz.org/CT. And if you need any information about education or classes or just any kind of help, please call our 24-hour helpline, 800-272-3900. That's 800-272-3900.
Thank you for listening to WPKN in Bridgeport, 89.5 FM, and online at WPKN.org, your community radio station.